Welcome. You are listening to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we ask brilliant educators everything you've ever wondered about teaching English language learners. I'm your host, Liesl Koop. I'm an ENL teacher and resource specialist with the Mid-State Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network in Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, we are here in this episode of Our Burning Questions, and today's question, there's a couple questions actually. Why use standards-based practices with ELLs? And the second question is, how do you use standards-based practices with ELLs? So our guest for this episode is Dr. Paulina White, and let me have her introduce herself to you. Hi, Paulina.
Hi, Liesl.
Dr. White. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are? So the first thing we would like people to know is, what's your role? What's your title? What do you do with English language learners?
I am an ENL teacher in a district, and I teach currently 7th and 8th grade and 3rd grade in both settings, standalone ENL class, which is typical, my own pullout classes, and caught taught mostly English with my English colleagues, and for the third grade as just a general classroom teacher.
Awesome. And for those people who might be listening who don't teach in New York State, I'm just going to clarify, ENL is English as a new language. And our regulations require us to teach standalone, which is just English language development in a class with just English language learners, and co-taught classes, which are a certified ENL teacher with a content area teacher or someone who has both certifications. So, Dr. White, are there any identity markers that you feel are important for you to share with the listeners that that you want people to know about you?
I think I have a long extending background with being myself, being an English language learner and becoming a English language learner teacher. And I've had extensive work that I've put in with working with ELLs, different populations from refugees, immigrants, even native speakers, but working on their English skills, to currently working on different research topics, which I think will bring us to what I currently focus on is standard practices for ELLs and standard-based assessment.
And in addition to your interest in your research in those areas, is there any other special interest you have, particularly working with ELLs or even outside of working with ELLs?
Well, not at the moment. Right now, I'm really focusing on how I can bring those practices into my own teaching and how I can share those practices that are currently working with colleagues around the world and my area.
I can't wait to hear more about that as we get into this. Another question so that our listeners can get to know you. What drew you to working with ELLs? You mentioned that a little bit, being an English language learner yourself, but what else drew you to working with English language learners?
I think just how they have, most of my students over the years that I've encountered, had the passion to learn the language, to be able to navigate their new surrounding areas that they are put into, and they're trying to accustom their areas to culture and everything else that surrounds them. They're like sponges. They just want to learn. And that gives me the more motivation to teach them. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can just, we're all excited. We're all in this together. We'll get through learning together, and we'll be English proficient at some point in our lives.
Are we ever really, truly, totally proficient?
No, because I'm still learning.
And I'm going to ask this question again at the end so people remember, but where can people find you or information about what you're doing? Are you on Twitter or Instagram? Do you have a website? Where can people find information about the work that you're doing?
Some of my work, I will be sharing it through LinkedIn. So on the bottom of my profile, currently I'm working adding links so then people can go to click on a specific link and get either the resources or any of my work that I've done and have presented in the past.
Great. So we will put the link to your LinkedIn page with the show notes page for this episode.
Awesome.
Okay. Are you ready to jump into this?
Yes, I am.
I'm excited. Our first question about standards-based practices is, I should say our first, our burning question. What does it mean for a teacher to be using standards-based practices? So feel free to speak to what that means in general and what that means for you personally. What does it mean for a teacher to be using standards-based practices?
Standard-based practices could mean a few things. You mentioned being more personal. For me, there's two things as far as being personal. One would be understanding what is expected at each grade and proficiency level for the students. And the second one is to drive, not necessarily just my instruction, but the ENL teacher's instruction based on the students' weaknesses when it comes to specific standards. For example, if I know that so-and-so is really weak on this specific time, and there's different activities, which I'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast, then I can target that specific time. I don't necessarily need to focus on speaking when the student's already proficient in speaking.
That's great. And I'm just going to clarify for anybody who doesn't know, a TOM is a target of measurement. We'll talk about that probably in more detail later, but targets of measurement are one of the tools or resources that we have as ENL teachers in New York. So kind of leading off of what you mentioned just now, why do you think teachers of ELLs in particular could or should use standards-based approaches?
In my experience, it helped me understand more where I'm heading as far as teaching and planning for my students. It helped me understand specifically what my students may need to work on that I might help them with, and then it might help them when it comes to the NISA slot, which is given in April and May. It allowed me to narrow down the curriculum that I was expected to teach. I could pull out certain sections and say, no, this is what my student specifically needs, as well as a guide in a direction where I didn't have a curriculum and I didn't know where I needed to go with my students. I would just take those times and focus on those because I knew where my students would have the weaknesses or the strengths.
It sounds like it would be something that could be helpful for teachers at all different stages of their careers.
Absolutely.
Do you think it is something that, you know, brand new teachers can navigate in addition to it being helpful for an experienced teacher like yourself?
Absolutely. I think it would help them tune in into a little bit more specifically to what's expected of the students. Yes, we don't necessarily teach to the NISA slot. However, just being aware of that, okay, well, this is what they're going to be tested on, and my student really is struggling with this, I can at least come up with activities and maybe discussions that would gear them towards that particular goal.
That sounds really helpful. And I think that as a teacher, I would wonder what's the impact of using a standards-based approach with my English language learners? And can you speak to what you've seen happen? You've talked a little bit about how it's influenced your planning and your focus. What other impact have you seen standards-based approaches have with your practice?
I think it helped my students, especially my 7th and 8th grade. Now I post my my time, which is specifically to I can statements, in relation to that. So they're a little bit more aware of that. They're aware of where my teaching is going, where they need to go as well. So it helps not only myself as a teacher, but my students to be aware as well.
I love that. Can you give us an example of like an I can statement that you would have posted in your classroom for a lesson?
Sure. For example, it could be as simple as I can use the following sentence frame to describe the character and setting of the reading.
Great. So it's like an objective that's directly related to that target of measurement.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Can you describe some lessons that kind of relates to this I can statement? Describe a lesson or an activity that you've done with students in your classroom that has been standards based.
So there's two different ways that I would use TAMS, depending on the two different classroom setting, the kata and standalone. In my standalone, there's two activities that I would do that are based off of TAMS. One is my bell ringer, which is super easy and quick. And I've been doing this for 2 years now, and I've seen such a great progress with teaching my students, acquiring the knowledge, the understanding, and the assessment of it. So what I do is they have a card that they just pick up at the door, and the cards are based on the unit that I'm teaching. So for example, if I'm teaching figurative language, all of the cards will have a question about it that they have to answer, and they'll note it on their sheet. They'll put down the card number, the question, and then they'll have to write their answer. The questions are based on the proficiency level as well. So it could be, for example, what is metaphor? Or I could say, can you draw me a picture of a metaphor? So there's different ways. So every question is different. And all those cards are aligned to a specific term, which I'll explain a little bit later as well, how grading the bell ringer comes into place.
I think a lot of people will be really interested to hear about the assessment and grading piece. So we will definitely talk about that.
Yes, and this is literally 5 minutes out of my whole class period that I have with my students. They pick up the card, they'll answer. I pick on you. My class is small this year, so I just pick on 3 students. We go over those answers right in class. So even if they get the answer wrong, they have the opportunity to write the correct answer. So for the next time they happen to have that card again, they can always reference back their sheet, and that's their review of the material as well. At the end of the week, I collect the sheet with 5 questions. We have 5 days, and they'll get 5 points. And I also have a checklist that's just for me. They'll say, okay, cards 1 through 10 deal with TUM speaking number 1 or writing 1.2. So as I check those off, I am able to gather some information whether they're acquiring and progressing in that time.
So when you first started using these kind of approaches and familiarizing yourself with the TOMS, is this where you started with the bell ringer? Did you find that that was like the easiest entry point for building in standards-based activities?
It was. And when I found it to be super easy, and it was a lot of work creating the cards as far as time consuming, but once I got a hang of it, now it's just super easy to come up with the next set for the next unit that I'm gonna teach. I can share a sample of just blank cards that you can change it however it fits your curriculum or the unit that you want to teach.
Cool, that would be awesome.
And then the next activity that I started doing, and I haven't done a whole lot with it just because of my class setting is extremely small, and it's standard-based centers, which is just 4 centers based on speaking, listening, reading, and writing. And what I would do, there is a basket for each time, and I would create an activity for each of those times. So for example, if I have Tommy over here that is new and he really needs to just focus on his speaking for X amount of time, then maybe Tommy will just stay in the speaking activity with Mary, and the two of them and myself, I usually include myself in the speaking center, will have guiding activities that help them acquire the knowledge to have access and be able to accomplish that specific time. As the students progress, I might move them. Maybe it's within a week, I might move them to a different center. It might be a month. It just depends on the activity and the progress of the individual student.
That sounds really cool, and it sounds really customizable.
It is, and the activities really could be teacher created or something that's already in your curriculum. It doesn't have to be, oh, now I have to create this whole thing. It can be if you choose to, but once again, they're very simple. For example, I'll share one for speaking, which would be Tom speaking, would be for grade 7-8, Tom 1, and it's just picture cards that would be on the table or in their little basket, and the question would be discussed and ask questions about the picture. So as we're sitting down in this little circle of ours, we would have sentence stems and then the picture, and we will have to use our oral skills to talk about that particular picture.
That's great. I have two questions that are kind of stemming from imagining what's happening in your classroom. The first question is this customizable based on proficiency level? And the second question is, have you ever planned something based on one of the TOMs that totally didn't work?
Well, when I first did the centers, it didn't work out the way I planned it. And I think majority had to deal with my small setting. I have, originally I have 6 students in the class. Few of them were absent for several days. So it just, when I did the rotations, I tried to kind of rotate them so they were not stuck in the same center for so long. I didn't have enough partners for some of the activities that I had designed originally. So that was just something that I had to work through and develop. But I've also ran it with my cutout class with ENL and Gen Population, and it worked out great. I just picked one center at first, and I did it with a speaking, and it was just amazing to see that my general population students still needed sentence stems and discussion questions to guide them through the kind of oral academic discussion that I wanted them to gain from that activity.
That is such a testament to what we as ENL teachers always say, which is that the strategies that we use are really going to help all kids, not just our English language learners.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have students in your class who are at different proficiency levels, can you speak a little bit about grouping and standards-based practices? I know I didn't prepare you with that question, but it just came to my mind as I was imagining your classroom. How do you intentionally group students when you're employing standards-based practices?
I think of it as, what is the activity and my end goal? What I want those students accomplishing. It could be based on, pairing lower proficiency level with another lower proficiency level student if it's a speaking activity and I want them to talk to each other using sentence frame and picture cards, for example. But it could be different if the activity is reading and one student is still struggling. I might have a lower proficiency and maybe a transition proficiency student working together, helping each other, but still have a part of a role. I do a lot of assigning roles when I do centers as well, when I do activities in groups particularly. So everyone has to contribute at some point, whether the student is a recorder, whether the student is the speaker. So they have generally roles. So everybody contributes.
That's great. That's what we want our kids to be able to do. Everybody gets the opportunity to participate.
Right. Even if it's a non-speaker, but the high proficiency level student tells them the answer and they just have to repeat it orally, it's still contributing. They're still practicing their oral skills.
Hmm. I kind of want to think about the assessment piece and the grading piece. So can you describe any standards-based assessments you've done with your kids? And also speak to the grading piece if that's something that you have been working with.
Yes, so for my standalone classes, going with that bell ringer has been a huge help because, like I said, it takes 5 minutes, and then at the end of the week, I'm able to check off. And now since I have cards made up for most of the units, I know that cards 1 through 10 deal with maybe one particular term. And then when I check that off and I see that student 1, 2, and 3 are still not meeting that particular term, then maybe I might change the activity to address it a little bit differently. Mm. I might put them in a center where there is an activity designed already for that specific section of it. Mm. That will help me understand why are they struggling in that time? What is it about it that might make them struggle? And another one that I've done, which has been super helpful in my Kato classes, is just a sheet of paper with all of the terms for that particular grade band. And on the front, it has all the terms laid out. On the back is just a blank with just a heading of what the name of the term is. And as I go into classes, now this takes a lot of planning and collaborating with my co-teachers as well when it comes to what activities are being utilized in the classes. So then I'm able to assess it that way. When I go in, I always have it on a clipboard, and if I know that they're doing particular assignment, I'll look at my chart and I'll see that this activity, if I know ahead of time, I'm already prepared that this is what they're going to be expected to do. If I don't, that's fine as well. I still have it in front of me and I can quickly check off. For example, if they're reading in class, when I go in, I can see that reading, if I'm in 7th grade, it would be 0.2, deals with reading comprehension, identifying key details. And so at the end of the reading in the class, if we're asking questions the whole class, I might ask one of my students to give me that answer. And then if they do answer it correctly, I can mark it on my chart. So-and-so was able to provide me with this kind of information, which matches that particular term. Mm. So by the end of the year, I usually have anecdotal notes about what that student particularly did to meet that requirement of that term. But it also tells me what specific terms might have not been covered, which at that point I can go to my colleague and say, hey, listen, we haven't addressed this time. Is there a way for us to create an activity so then I can address that specific time?
That sounds really helpful. I'm hearing you describe all of the planning and the preparation and the organization that it takes to do these practices and to make these lessons. And I'm imagining teachers who are like, oh my gosh, like there's already so much on my plate with being an ENL teacher, with, you know, trying to co-teach in multiple classes and teach my standalone and support my students' families and engage them in our school community. What would you say to somebody if they said, oh, like, why bother doing it this way? Why is this better, or why is this something worth trying?
Well, I'll tell you that I will share in the link, and I think we'll provide a link at the end of the podcast as well, with I have completed K-12, a resource to measure TOMS, like the checklist I was talking about that you can bring in to the KOTOL classes. You can use it in your standalone as well, but I found it more helpful in my KOTOL classes if I don't have enough planning as well. It is very, it sounds a lot more detailed than what really is. It is simple to just have it with you at all times. And are you going to look for the same, you know, for a time every single day? No, you might work on that specific time for extended period of time. So there's no sense of creating anything, because everything that your classroom teacher is already doing, it might online, it might just not online at the time frame that you might originally imagine. So, so it takes a lot of thinking as far as, okay, what are we going to be doing? What are we focusing on a general aspect in this class? And then I usually go back on my own and I can, okay, well, how can I align this time to, or what can I listen to that would give me the information from this particular student?
So what do you think the kids get out of you aligning activities and instruction with the TOMS that they wouldn't get if you didn't align them with those standards?
I think, and that's just my own personal, and I think it also goes back to how I do my bell ringer and my essential question, my I can't statement that I have on a board. They see how it's aligned. They see how it's aligned and what type of question, reading or written response might be asked on an ISA slot. And they see the understanding and correlation between what I do in my class and what we might be doing in their KOTOL classes, because I see them in both settings, some of my students. So they see how what we're learning in my standalone class, they can bring in to their KOTOL class.
It sounds to me like I'm hearing you say that this provides a level of transparency and maybe even ownership for the kids that isn't always there.
Yes. I've had a particular student of mine this year who wasn't doing so great last year really come out of their shell and say, oh, I really do need this. I now see why you're doing this, because in the next period, this is what we're going to be doing, right? And I'll say, yes, exactly. This is why what we do here, you bring it in with you to the next class.
That was
more of a aha moment, not only for them, but for me as well. I'm like, oh, okay, now they understand where I'm going with this. I understand where I'm going with this. It wasn't just kind of free for all.
And that kind of leads into my next question, which you already have addressed in some ways, but I'm wondering if you have more to say about it. What do you do differently as a teacher when you use standards-based approaches? If you reflect on your practice before you started this process and your research in this area, and you think about how you taught and how you prepared versus now, how are those different or how are they the same?
I find myself to be a little bit less stressed because the way I plan my lessons is differently. In my KOTOL classes, a lot of planning, collaborating with my colleagues on the activities, if they're not specifically aligned to the times that I'm looking for, and the lessons that I'll be teaching, I'm more geared to, I don't have to come up with so much. At first, when I started teaching, I felt like I was overwhelmed. I had to teach this whole curriculum, or I needed to do all these activities, when in fact, if I just focused on the time, well, no, all those activities that I was doing before deal with the same time. If my students are able to accomplish just one time with one activity, why am I doing three more? I had to ask myself that, and it really put it in perspective. Like, I don't necessarily need to do so much. I can really tune into what's the necessity for my students, how I can target their weaknesses, how I can improve their skills.
So more like quality over quantity.
Yes. Yes.
So I think that sounds like a breath of fresh air to teachers who are being asked to do so much and cram all this stuff in, and really the idea of prioritizing and truly knowing your students and knowing what they need to grow their English language development. I feel like that would be so powerful for any teacher.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Which leads me into my next question, and you've already addressed this a couple of times, but what resources can you share, or can you point us in the direction of some tools that you've used and found helpful?
Well, some of the tools that we've already talked about and discussed and some of the activities we will be sharing with the podcast, or I'll share it with on my LinkedIn account as well, that already are developed and have been into use. Other ones I'm still working on, and I'm not quite to the point of sharing it just because I'm tweaking it. I was presenting recently in Rochester at the Applied Linguistic Conference. So since then, I wanted to tweak a few things before I go ahead and make it shareable. Mm. But addition to that, I have been working with Arburn on the ENL Council, which we have now, which, yay, I'm so excited to be part of. We're working on some of the things that I have done individually. We're kind of expanding as far as working with TOMS and bringing the TOMS into content classes. If you are co-teaching in different content classes, because as we know, we sometimes we're in an English class, sometimes we're in a science class. Mm-hmm. So how those can be relatable and how can those be useful in those classes, as well as activities that as the council is being, as we're developing these activities, we'll have a document that's for all grade levels, I should mention, shareable and useful for not only ENL teachers, but I think all teachers in general.
Wonderful. For teachers who are really excited about the things that you've described or have considered kind of implementing some standards-based lessons or standards-based assessment, where would you recommend that they begin?
I think for me was the easiest way. When I started looking, I looked at the one sheet, which has all the times, and I just went with it. I had it with me for the first several weeks. And as I walked around and I met with my co-teachers and I said, okay, what are you doing this week for the class? And I started thinking, okay, if I have this particular activity that they're going to be doing in a class, what kind of TOM or which TOM is relatable? And if I really wasn't sure, what I found very helpful is I went on the Common Core website, and I know that will be changing. However, I went there and I went, now I'm co-teaching with English teachers this year. So it might be different for you if you're co-teaching and different, you might go to the Common Core Science or
social next gen science.
Yeah, so I went there and I looked at the standard and I kind of saw the correlation. And once I saw the correlation from what my colleague was doing with the activity, then I said, okay, now I know that this activity, I can address it with at least three times. So as the students did that activity, I was able to assess it and check it off. And it was super easy because it was just an addict note of notes. It's just for you to know. So it's super easy to just write comments, draw a picture, or you could just circle the time and say, you know, if you're not doing it per individual student, you know, write just Mary, and then circle. She addressed that time. You know that she did. Mm. And the bell ringer, aligning the bell ringer was super easy for me. I'm not sure how, but it really was.
That's great. And I was just imagining as you were describing going in and learning more about those content standards, I was picturing myself as an earth science teacher, for example, let's say, because I love earth science, and imagining my co-teacher, ENL teacher, coming into the classroom and saying, "Hey, I looked up the standards for the lesson that we're doing today in earth science, and here is the TOM, the linguistic kind of standard that aligns with what we're doing in terms of the content." And just imagining how that would feel as the content teacher, I feel like I would be so, number one, surprised and grateful and really appreciative of that level of preparation and accountability from my co-teacher. Have you found that using these kind of practices have had an impact on your co-teaching relationships?
Absolutely. And what you had just described was actually one of my co-teachers. This is our second year working together. Last year was kind of getting to know each other, and I would share some of my EML practices, and really wasn't put into place till towards the end of last year. And this year we just went with it. And it was amazing for me to see my co-teacher just acquiring, like, wow, all of my kids need this. How else can I do more of this? Mm-hmm. And I really putting myself out there as another teacher. We're both there to help the students, no matter who it is, mm-hmm. Whether it's my ELS, whether it's my gen population, you know, whether it's someone just popping in the class for the class period. But it definitely helped us personally to grow. It helped us as far as being an educator, and helped the students. So it's all around win-win, I feel like.
Yeah, that's really powerful, I think, what you just said. It's not just about, like, the instruction or being in the classroom, but really as professionals, improving our own practice and improving our relationships with our co-teachers.
Absolutely.
That's great. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about in terms of your standards-based lessons and assessments that you'd like to share with us?
I think we covered it all, to be honest. I'm so excited to share with everyone because it has been working in my class and I love using it. Just hopefully some of the other stuff that I'm working on as it becomes available to, I hopefully teachers will find it useful as well.
Yeah, I know you and I are both very passionate about this topic and about helping other people implement these kind of approaches, because you and I have both talked in the past about how beneficial it has been for us. And, you know, it is a very steep learning curve if you're trying to figure it out all on your own.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons that we initially started talking about this together, because we realized, hey, if we can share a couple resources or share our own experiences, maybe that'll make it a little bit more accessible to other teachers who are in the same situations that we have been in.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I could talk about this all day, but we will definitely put links in the show notes section to your LinkedIn and to some of the resources that we've been talking about, and maybe a description about what the Mid-State Arburn ENL Council has been working on in terms of TOMS-based resources for ENL teachers in New York State. Anything else?
No, other than the links, if anyone has a question or wants to chat, visit my classroom, email me. I'm always available, even through LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook, and even though it's my personal page, I for some reason, I tend to always answer it through that way faster.
Okay, we'll definitely put your contact information in the notes page, and hopefully we can get some people trying some more standards-based approaches.
Yes, and for those that do, I would love to hear what you're doing and how it is impacting your teaching or whether it was useful for you or not.
That would be great to get some of that actionable feedback that we need from teachers.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. White, for talking with me today about our burning questions around standards-based practices for English language learners.
And thank you very much for having me.
And I'm sure that we will talk soon.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to learn more about the brilliant guests we had on today's episode or any of the resources that we discussed, please find those links in our resources page. This podcast is produced by Mid-State Arburn at OCM BOCES, and we hope that you'll tune in next time for more of our burning questions.